You're listening to 2012 and Beyond on WSLR Radio. My name is Emily, and my guest today is Alec Gray. Alec is a longtime researcher of UFOs, government mind control, and other interests. So tell us how you became interested in the subject of UFOs and mind control, government mind control.
I'm also a minister, and I have a long time background in studying things spiritual, and I started to realize that there was a sort of a barrier happening between people and their perception of the world and sort of their ability to make a leap into looking at things in a spiritual manner. There was what we might call today like a dumbing down or something like that, to where people were mesmerized by a certain other, what I like to call the Maya or the illusion. They're sort of mesmerized by this other picture and unable to make the leap into a different lifestyle. And they were also generally unaware of certain things. My research background kind of made me aware that a lot of different things were going on because I worked with a lot with corporations. So I kind of knew the products and what different kinds of projects were going on. I just started to put a lot of things together. So my interest in UFOs, it was only the beginning of all this. I mean, I've been interested in UFOs since I was probably in the fourth grade, but I never had any of my own experiences until around 1992. And then after that, my wife and I at that time got really involved in researching all of what we thought were the related topics.
What were some of the experiences you had at that time?
We had some past life regressions, mm-hmm. Including past life regressions that hinted at lifetimes in other dimensions and uh-huh. other places. And I felt that there was an initial connection somewhere back there. There's an initial point where we all came into existence. But I felt like we really saw that. So that kind of really opened my eyes to the fact that there were other dimensional realities that weren't just theoretical, that they really existed, and that included multidimensional beings, other interplanetary beings, other races and stuff like that. And so we began to have communications, shall we say, like in meditation or under hypnosis, with other beings.
Now, these are some pretty intense past-life regressions. Was it just you that had such profound experiences, or did your wife as well?
No, my wife did as well. We recorded much of that, and I'd like to get a lot of that translated, but it's very difficult given our technology at the time.
Right.
But, yeah, we began to see that, there was a bigger picture, and we began to see more of our roots. What we thought of as our roots weren't really here on mm-hmm. this earth. They were elsewhere, and so that meant that there was a lot to do in terms of figuring out how it all fit together, what all these lifetimes meant, how long I had been here, why I was here. excuse me. And for each of us, it was a little bit different. But we reconnected in this lifetime, and that reconnection helped us to discover a whole lot about ourselves. And we really felt at that time that our karmic circle here had come all the way around. And so basically, I'm not quite sure if this is my last lifetime here, but I'm fairly sure that it is based on the information that I have received.
Hmm. So when you say information you have received, is that something like you would have just ideas or thoughts or sort of certainties that would come to you during meditations, or do you have actual recall of literally having conversations with other beings, whether it's telepathic or whatever?
We literally had conversations with other beings. And just to give you a short example, there were times, and I was trained in shamanism, and so was she. And mm-hmm. so basically we knew how to achieve altered states of consciousness. And so a lot of times what we would do is we would go into a space like that together and intentionally. And sometimes we used to call them our people. our people would try to break through and make some kind of communication. And so we could be sitting in a room, and we would begin to hear things like voices or something like that. it was almost like somebody was standing there, but they weren't visible.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe they were talking to somebody else about basically their inability to manifest on this plane. Like, they were frustrated because they wanted to sit, they wanted to manifest and sit and talk with us, but they were unable to do so. So we had to resort to more like trance-like states to receive the information, which my wife would kind of channel. And I would record and ask questions and do that sort of thing, and we would receive information that way. It was just too hard for these beings to manifest. And we did have one incident where they did manifest, and it wasn't like any kind of alien experience, you know, that I had had before. They appeared in what looked like sort of a football-shaped bubble, and it was larger than a football by maybe three times. And basically what they were trying to do, what it looked like to us, you know, and we, of course, have an inability to explain these things, but there was sort of like a spark inside this football-shaped, and it was clear, so you could see through it. But it looked like they were trying to spark themselves into, like, what looked like a human shape. And so they did. There were about three of these bubbles on this one occasion that we saw, and two of them manifested as people. Like, they would look like humanoids to you and me.
Were they solid, or was it like a...
I'm not sure.
Did it have a sort of opaque...
When we experienced this, we were having a larger UFO experience as a whole, and we knew that, quote, our people were going to be part of this, and when it was in our backyard in San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we were sitting in our bedroom just basically looking out the window and watching all this go down when these shapes appeared out of some sort of portal. They came down in a strict, like a column-shaped kind of unit, and they appeared in the yard, and they were probably, you know, I don't know, maybe 300 yards away. So I'm not really sure, you know, what if they were solid or they were just manifesting that way for our benefit. I had the feeling they were manifesting that way just for our benefit. but also I recognized the person that the most successful person that manifested was somebody that I felt a familiarity with. I'm not so sure if that was physical or that I just knew him. But mm-hmm. He appeared as male, like an older male, white hair, you know, all this kind of stuff. And from then on out, our communication with them was telepathic. But we were told that things were changing. This was probably in 1996. That things were going to be changing on the Earth. And that as a particular race or people, they were not going to be able to communicate with us anymore. Until some other future point in time, which has not happened yet.
Did they say why? I mean, were they saying there were going to be good changes on Earth or something detrimental and that's why they weren't going to be able to communicate? Or was that not really
Well, part of the information that we received with it was that there would be basically what, you know, it's kind of like, here's the herd going down the road a certain direction. And at some point, there was going to be an opportunity for those who were spiritually minded and those of a certain consciousness to separate from that mass, whatever it is. We felt that it was some action like being sucked into a black hole, or we kept getting this impression like the Earth was being sucked into a black hole.
Mm-hmm.
Like this is like a visual. The Earth was being sucked into a black hole, and basically at some point, we called it the ping. There was going to be a moment in time where certain beings were going to be able to sort of hit a moment and pop back out. And not be sucked in to that black hole and, you know, go home, wherever that is for them. So what that means as far as Earth changes and all that kind of stuff, I'm not sure. And I'm not sure if that was just sort of an illustration, mm-hmm. you know, for us to realize. But it also matched up with my prior ideas about ascension and rapture and these kind of things. So I thought, well, this kind of matches. There's going to be some kind of moment where there might be some sudden shift in certain people. They might just leave. I'm not exactly sure if we'll get a ride, you know, or we'll just ascend, or, you know, what's going to happen. But since that time, we have had no communications with our particular people. There have been a lot of other alien visitations, but none from our particular home or place. That at least that we would intend to return.
Did they identify, or did you? Were you able to identify or put a name to where you think that home or place was?
Not exactly. I believe it's interdimensional, and mm-hmm. I believe it's somewhere near the Pleiades.
Mm-hmm.
It's not an actual star, to my knowledge. Like, it's not a planet or a star. I came to believe and understand that there are places in between planets and stars,
mm-hmm.
in between even our life right here. This is what got me into the whole electromagnetic thing to begin with, where other dimensions exist simultaneously with ours.
Mm-hmm.
So even if you're an astronaut and you're flying around in space, there are going to be spaces in there where other dimensions could exist, where time is folded, or wormholes exist, or, you know, now we're starting to understand these things.
Right.
You know? But actually, there are as many different kinds of beings and places as probably the human imagination has even covered, and then even more. So if you can imagine it, it exists. It's out there somewhere.
Right. I've been reading a book by Philip Imbrogno, which is very, very interesting. And there is one part in the book where he suggests that UFOs that people see are not necessarily something that's, you know, cruising around the universe, happens to fly to our planet. It's really that they're there the whole time. It's just they're in a different dimension. It's something happens, there's a shift,
right.
whatever, a break, and you see it. But they're there the whole time. It's just it's on another dimension. And I found that a very interesting concept.
Unfortunately for us, it's like wherever we're from, our people are not able to do that. So they're not like sitting by, like interdimensionally, like waiting.
Right.
They're far away somewhere, and they're not. And I don't know if it has to do with a particular way of travel.
Mm-hmm.
As part of that group of people, one thing that I did remember is that part of my job was that I do travel a lot through the universe. I've been establishing planets and things like that for a long time, and so I kind of have an idea when I really tap into it that they're having, you know, difficulties in travel because of probably the frequencies that are going on here right now. The frequencies are heavier, there's a lot of darkness, there's a lot of light too coming through. But at this time in our Earth space, there's a lot of different density. There's too much density for these kind of light beings to be able to manifest and be present. So
I think if you look back on history, throughout the history of this planet, of the history that we know, I would say it's been pretty dense and dark.
Yeah, yeah, and it's improved in some ways,
mm-hmm.
and then in other ways it hasn't. And that's kind of like why I'm teaching on this current stuff right now, is because there are things and forces that try to prevent people from recognizing this actual reality. That there is another reality even, or that these other dimensions exist. So people are sort of oppressed, we like to say dumbed down or whatever. They're unaware.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of us believe that they will soon be more aware. But this is like traveling through density, you know. So, humankind started out in a certain place physically. And I believe that it's true that a lot of beings did interfere with that process. Interfere is really the right word, but they did sort of combine with humanity,
mm-hmm.
and help them move along at certain stages in history. And that basically we're at a point now where people, they felt like we stopped evolving in the last 40, 50,000 years, but actually we're finding that through DNA and other kinds of neuroscience that we are actually evolving faster than ever before. So it's sort of a push-pull relationship, you know, between the densities of human energy and earth energy and light energy and, you know, enlightenment, shall we say, or something like that.
What I really feel is happening right now as we hopefully are moving to a more enlightened, aware age, and hopefully people are rising up a bit, I get the feeling that the lunatics who are basically running the zoo are panicking. So we're seeing more and more acceleration of the supposed dark side of things as they realize they're losing their control, hopefully. And hope this is the way I feel it's going, and hopefully the more enlightened, good, liberated side will rise up enough that these... Because, you know, we are controlled by a very, very small minority, and mm-hmm. I think that's always the case, but for some reason that minority always has so much power over the masses through fear and intimidation. So now you see the lunatics running, as I call them lunatics, you know,
right.
they're running scared, they're scared, the warmongers, they're panicking, the people want to put chips in us. They're really freaking out because I think they see that there is this sort of awareness building up, and oh, what are we going to do?
Mm-hmm. Well, as we know, everything is connected.
Mm-hmm.
So there's what those people are doing and their agenda, and then there's like what the people have to do to, like, your average people that are not in control, let's say, what they must do to rise up to a level to receive, I hate to call it spiritual enlightenment, because it's really, it's even more scientific than it sounds that way. It's more of an expansion beyond what the agenda of the, say, so-called dark side would be.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Right.
Yeah. And so as long as people are trapped, and not just by what we might call the cabal or the Illuminati or whatever, they're trapped by their own ideas, they're trapped by media, they're trapped by chemicals, drugs, food, all kinds of different influences, electromagnetic fields, until people start taking some control of their and responsibility for themselves. It's not going to just happen automatically, I don't think. There's that point in science that they call critical mass, mm-hmm. and I'm sure you're familiar with that, when everything reaches a certain point, then there will be a change. So yes, they're changing, those that you call the lunatics or whatever, they're on one side of it going, oh my God, what's going on? You know, we're kind of losing control here maybe. Whereas the people are starting to see, hey, what have you been doing to us this whole time? You know, how have you been manipulating us? How have you been controlling us? And it always surprises me when I see that. I'm happy to see it, but still, it always amazes me that, you know, like even a simple example was the Tea Party protest mm-hmm. that was going on, and people are, you know, and I saw people on the news from California and places, you know, with that we're mad as hell and we're not going to take it anymore, and I was like, wow, this is a major step. People, average people, mm-hmm. are starting to get upset and act out. Now, that's a good thing. You know, any kind of stirring up the energy. And it makes things feel messy. And it makes things feel confusing.
Mm-hmm.
And even for people who consider themselves light workers, things have become, you know, either they're doing all right or it's become very difficult. And it's just a time period we have to get through. That's at least the way that my so-called people have explained it to us, is that there will be a time period that looks really, really dark, but it's kind of the darkness before the dawn. And I know all of us have that kind of feeling, so.
Now, you mentioned media. Let's talk a bit about how you feel the media influences this.
Well, basically, I feel that in addition to a lot of other forces, media basically shapes what we know as the world. So, and I'm not talking about, you know, the top 2 percentile in intelligence or anything. I'm talking about just average people. Media controls everything that defines our world. Let's just, you know, we'll put ourselves in that category for a minute. And let's say that you and I don't know each other at all, and we decide, you know, with another group of people that we're going to maybe go out to dinner or something. So we all go out to dinner. What happens immediately that I've observed is that people immediately begin talking about things that they have seen on TV or a sporting event. Certain topics are like, okay, weather, sports, news, you know, politics is even a little convoluted and difficult for people to talk about, and they've been trained not to talk about politics and religion and things like that. But the things they talk about usually revolve around the popular media, what we see on TV, what happens in the movies, what's going on in magazines. And people like, you know, and I hate to be crude, but people like animals are easily trained. So if you train a person that this is the world, whatever you show them over and over and over and over again, then they begin to believe that this is the world. And not only that, unless they're very smart and or, you know, very enlightened to some degree, how are they going, once they're trained and all these images are programmed into their mind and all these ways of thinking, they're basically being programmed to be more of like a consumer culture, then how are they going to think outside the box? How are they going to think of something like we're going to go to dinner and we're going to talk about what? Something we've never thought of? Something we've never been able to see or comprehend? So TV and media are both big, big, huge controllers of how people view the world and what's acceptable to talk about and what we have in common. So they make a common reality and it forms a common reality. So I find it's much bigger than, say, just the Illuminati or those few people that are in control. It's like, I used to think, yeah, this could all be a conspiracy. But now I think that there's a lot of different components that play into it. They're all valid. The media is just one of them. But they're all a way of, it's still a matter of control. It still keeps people under control.
Mm-hmm.
But it also limits their imagination. And one of the things that happens, too, is debunking. A lot of debunking of the things that we're talking about right now. So you might see a TV program about 2012. You might see a program about UFOs. Or you might even, you know, we could go rewind a little bit here and talk about the X-Files. Mm-hmm. Like a program like the X-Files. When I started to have my UFO experiences in San Francisco, the X-Files was just coming on TV. At that time we didn't watch TV. So I never even knew. I knew what the X-Files was, but I never saw it. And when I would tell people the things that were happening to me, they would say, well, you've been watching too much of the X-Files or something.
Mm-hmm.
See, so there's something about putting that information out there that on the one hand gives it some validity, and on the other hand discredits it, so that people come away thinking, well, and I think it's the, you know, like in movies, we just had the Indiana Jones movie, the Crystal Skull incident, so they were alluding to the fact there that maybe we were seeded by other races, maybe our ancestry isn't what we think it is, this kind of thing, but also the antics and the special effects and, you know, all of this stuff makes it harder for people to accept as reality. It seems more like fantasy. So I haven't fully gotten to the bottom of all of that, but it does make me wonder, like, why certain things are being allowed on TV right now, especially these so-called documentaries about UFOs and alien experiences, and this is becoming very, very popular.
Mm-hmm.
So on the one hand, I think they're prepping people for further experiences in these realms, and then on the other hand, I think, you know, and that the debunking part may get less and less over time, but they're still trying to shape, you know, how people feel about it, which is, a lot of it is kind of negative. You know, like what we see on the UFO Hunters and programs like that are telling us, these people want to implant you, they want to hurt you, mm-hmm. they want to mutilate cattle, you know, they want to, and of course, as we know, like, all human beings are not evil and bad. Well, not all aliens are evil.
Exactly.
And bad.
And not all aliens will be all sweetness and light, but
exactly.
Certainly not all of them will be bad. Like
just
say,
like us.
Just like us.
We're the microcosm.
Right.
The macrocosm is going to be the same thing.
There's
going to be good and evil and all that kind of stuff going on, too.
I've noticed more and more, as you were just saying, that if you go onto the internet, just the regular Yahoo News or anything, almost it seems like daily we're being bombarded with new planets out there, could they support life? And I'm noticing media manipulation, a key word that's been used a lot is, they keep using the word, could planets, they're finding planets that could possibly support life. So that is implanting an idea in people's heads,
mm-hmm.
and I think as a preparation,
oh,
some
yeah,
kind
no.
of disclosure, whether they're doing it as a disclosure to try and make us, like you say, fear them so that we can have weapons and start
war
right. up in
mm-hmm.
space, and we don't know. But definitely we're being primed, because more and more, we've always been told, no other planets can support life. Suddenly they're talking about, could the moon have supported life? Could this planet be supporting life? So.
And do look at the keywords, because as a researcher, you learn that keywords are everything.
Mm-hmm.
They are everything. They are what programs you. They are the words that go in your mind, like hearing a song over and over and over again. Pretty soon you can just sing along with that song in your car or whatever, you're not thinking about it. Keywords work the same exact way. And some of them, as we know from mind control efforts from the government, they could be used to trigger people into certain behaviors and ways of thinking. So do pay attention to the keywords. I think in the end it's going to be a matter of that critical mass. You know, what do we want to invite into our reality?
Mm-hmm.
You know, is it going to be war? Is it going to be more of the same? Star Wars and this kind of stuff? Or is it going to be a more embracing, you know, enveloping kind of feeling like, yes, we welcome you. We want to learn from you. How it's going to play out, it really depends on people. We have choice.
You're listening to 2012 and Beyond on WSLR Radio 96.5 LPFM. And my guest today is Alec Gray. We're talking about mind control and manipulation. Alec, we talked about media manipulation and control. There's also a lot that governments are doing that people are not necessarily aware of. And now, as always happens with the passage of time, we're allowed to hear about what they were doing in the 50s, the 60s, and the 70s, the hideous MK Ultra and other very, very nefarious mind control activities, shocking people in deep sleep and all this trauma and implanting key words. So I would imagine now going on in this day and age, there's also a lot going on that in 20 years' time we'll be allowed to hear about. What are you aware of that's going on at this point?
Well, I no longer follow specific projects in terms of, like MKUltra and things like that, because those are experimental and they basically involve small groups of people, let's say, where they're still working those things out. And yes, and as a researcher, I found that on the internet, maybe even 10 years ago, it was a lot easier to find information that you weren't really supposed to access. Mm-hmm. But now that the internet is basically more of a consumer vehicle, it's virtually impossible to find that same kind of information. So what I've done, though, is I also think that those things, yes, they're going on, and they're going on militarily. Especially, I feel like the military has always been a hotbed for experimentation for the government, no matter what. Certain populations can be experimented on because, like for instance, if they want to run into a town and they want to do some kind of viral experiment, all they have to do, or maybe I forget how the law works, but in certain places they don't even have to inform anyone, but either the mayor or the governor, I forget what it was, and basically they can go in there, they can do whatever they want, and the people don't have to have any knowledge of it. Mm-hmm. So we know it goes on all the time. But the bigger, the things that have been successful and implemented already are the things that concern me. And these are things like, we might refer, and maybe just two components or three would be easy to talk about here, and that would be chemicals, and when I say three, I mean food, and I also mean chemtrails, things like that. So that's the chemical category, that's two things. And the EMF category, which would cover HARP, mm-hmm. and possibly even chemtrails. We know that chemtrails are possible carriers of polymers that are capable of carrying radio-transmitted kinds of, they're basically radio-transmitting polymers that can be inside the chemtrail itself as it falls to the ground. So there's a lot of radio control. Electromagnetic frequency is a huge, huge player in this. For one thing, your TV even changes the patterns of your brain when you watch it for a certain length of time. And it puts you in a more suggestive state. Okay, so that's one form of electronic control, mind control. Then they're planting keywords, too, throughout the news, especially news and colors, that whole the terrorist thing, the colors, the levels of yellow to red or whatever it is. It's like all these things that really make human beings react from a very base place. But they also control our moods. They also control the way we think about things, our ability to think about things. Pharmaceuticals play a large role in this. Mm-hmm. We know the government has done a lot of experimentation with drugs. Aspartame, fluoride, all of these things are part of the control. HARP is able to broadcast over the entire continental United States.
For anyone who's not familiar with HARP, give us a quick background on that.
HARP is an antenna array in Alaska that basically broadcasts. Their original goal was over-the-horizon radar detection. So, and also they're doing some space kinds of things, like if an asteroid comes into Earth, they may be able to use things like HARP to destroy it before they can aim this big beam at our, into the atmosphere and basically shoot down a missile, shoot down an asteroid. So basically it's a military thing. But it's also, their experimentation has been altering our ozone layer. It causes waves and holes and things like this in the ozone layer. But also the radio part and the EMF part that affects us is that because its broadcast is so large, it has been shown to affect mood. So literally, and you can go, it used to be, and I haven't been there for a year or so, but you could go to the HARP website, and there's an actual radar readout. And I always wonder with certain patterns of behavior if this is what's going on, because, for instance, we just had a rash of animals doing violent things to people. And I kind of wonder, what were the influences there? Was there a big spike at HARP or something more local? It can cause people to be depressed. It's shown to depress the immune system. There's a great book by Richard Begich, B-E-G-I-C-H, and he wrote a book called Angels Don't Play This Harp.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want to learn more about that, that is a great resource. But basically, it has the ability to subdue and to, you know, cause people to be depressed. So between what's happening with that, the radiation and the radio waves and all the frequencies we're getting from our appliances and our TVs and our electrical stuff, the drugs that we're taking to be sort of not depressed, the chemicals that are in our food that are also causing neuro damage to us, are basically the things that control us. These are the issues that we're up against. And the reason that I got into that was because I'm also a minister, and as a minister, I noticed that, you know, people were trying to achieve a spiritual life, and I'm talking about mainstream now. You know, at that time, I was in the mainstream Christian arena. But I noticed that not only were these people sort of stuck in a certain way of thinking, but they were also obese. They had certain problems that were, like, you know, inherent in the scene, although they wanted to be spiritual, and they talked about being ready for a rapture or something like this. I could see that their frequency wasn't resonating at a level that matched the other people that I was dealing with that were into ascension and things like this. These people were literally trying to raise their vibration, while other people were depending on some outside force to come and, like, rescue them out. But meanwhile, they could do whatever they wanted. You know, they could indulge in some of the worst food, do whatever. And they were still basically under control. And so I thought to myself, how are you going to convince people like this that they are being controlled and that they need to make changes? And there was two factors that came into play, and I think it applies to all of us, and it's sort of a spiritual direction. But in the Christian Bible, it talks about the prince of the power of the air, which generally is, in theology, is thought to refer to Lucifer, okay? But we can look at this figuratively, or we can look at it literally, you know, and I don't believe that there's a literal devil, you know, or something like that. But I do believe there are powers, there are beings, we know there's orbs, we know there might be angels, there's maybe aliens, there's all these different kinds of beings. And when I started looking into that prince of the power of the air thing, all of this started to make sense to me, in a sense that all of the things that we're talking about, EMF, harp, radio, TV, these are broadcast. These are things, even the chemicals, they're airborne,
mm-hmm.
you know? And I started seeing, if there is such a thing as a dark side, and the title of that being, literally or figuratively, is the Prince of the Power of the Air, then this is the force that we're up against. We're not up against some satanic figure with horns and a tail. We're up against something way more sinister and way more widespread than that. And I started applying the concept and started seeing more and more, like, everything that I thought of as a control maneuver was related. You know, like, for instance, even if you have an implant, like if they succeed in the RFID chip,
mm-hmm.
that is radio frequency. It is still airborne. It is still a wave. So I thought, here's a mass group of people, mainstream Christians, looking at the wrong target, you know, altogether. They think there's some being out there that's out to do them wrong, you know, and they really want to avoid that, and they're clinging to this other being for security, when really they have a lot more power than they thought, because, matter of fact, even in the Bible, it says the weapons of our warfare, spiritual warfare, are not carnal. They're not human. They're not bodily. You know, they're not physical. They're spiritual. So we're talking about something here that's on another level. It's not necessarily that we need to go to war, you know, that we need to kill off these people or something. But there's something else about this whole concept of the Prince of the Power of the Air that we need to look at, and that is, there is a force that is dumbing us down, that is causing us to be unable to see through it to higher levels, let's say. And here's a bunch of people, like, to go back to the mainstream idea, they're hoping that Jesus is going to one day return, there's going to be a rapture, and they're going to go. And they're going to be gone. Well, when I started looking into that in connection with this theory, I started realizing that one of the images we're given is that before that event, whatever it is, there's a trumpet sound in heaven. It says an angel blows a trumpet. Okay. Now, what I've learned since then is that I believe it's wormholes that have the opening shape of a trump. You know, on either end, there's an opening shape like a trump. And you can look into William Henry for this topic. He's really into studying doorways and portals and this kind of thing. And he came to the conclusion that, and the same conclusion that I did, and that's basically that this trump has been used in other mythologies and other ways of thinking to kind of illustrate a mind-expanding kind of an incident. Like if you see an old painting, and there's an angel, like, I forget if it's Jacob that was laying on the rock or who was, but sleeping, you know, and there's a painting of the angel blowing a trump at him while he's sleeping, and the angel's kind of hovering over him. Well, this was a symbol of his spiritual and mental expansion. The angel was opening his mind to these other realms. So, the bottom line of everything that I'm saying is, if you can't resonate with that sound, with that, whatever it is, frequency, then you, your mind, and your spirit will not be able to respond. If you're so full of chemicals and weighed down by electromagnetic frequency and all these things, then yes, they have succeeded. They have succeeded because you, as a spiritual being, are no longer able to connect to source. So this is the battle. The battle is not about the world and people in it and just about how we need to, like, go into Iraq and we need to go into Afghanistan and we need to, you know, we need to kill people all over the place. There's a much greater war going on, and that's the war for people's souls and spirits. And that's what we're talking about when we talk about the government or the cabal or the Illuminati or any of those things, is basically the goal of that is to prevent people from reaching their true potential, who they really are. And this is like the message now that for me is just like burning. You know, I've been talking a lot about it because I feel like as widespread as it can be, people need to realize that they have control over these things. They can change their diets. They can learn to turn off the television. They can seek out other sources. They can educate themselves about chemtrails, about HARP, about things that affect them. And like one of the things I really like to say is that awareness is probably your number one defense. And then, like,
and taking responsibility, because that is also something that's ingrained in people from day one, that they're not responsible for anything. And, you know, if you get sick, don't try and get knowledge about what it is and take control of it. Go to the doctor, he'll give you a magic pill. Mm-hmm. And it continues on up, that this total lack of responsibility, and then this sort of general apathy where you, when you do show people information of what's going on, you say, yes, that's terrible, but what can we do?
Mm-hmm. I think more people are responding to that, too, because my adventures online in other communities are showing me that we're finding out, as you said earlier, more and more of what we've been taught is a lie.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's about pharmaceuticals, you know, a lot is coming out about that. You know, how certain statins are really super bad, or we thought this was a good thing to do as an antibiotic, but now we're learning that it's not. So I think people are learning to trust those things less, especially. And I, you know, I don't always like to apply it generationally or to age, because I've met a lot of older people that are very open-minded. But as the knowledge, you know, as you were saying, things accelerate, and knowledge does too. Our knowledge is almost doubling now, like every some couple of years. So basically, the younger generation has a better chance, not only because first the awareness comes, right? First people start becoming, oh wow, all this is going on. Then people start taking responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
Then people start acting. So it starts kind of on a thought level. And basically, we've been at that level for a while now, and now we're starting to get to the next level where we take responsibility. And so we're just going to have to keep going with that process, because in the end, that responsibility is going to lead us to change. And that, you know, so that's when we talk about, like, is it going to get darker? Is it going to get lighter? It all depends on who wins.
And it depends on how people deal with the situation. For example, people are so afraid of an economic collapse and a global economic collapse. And personally, I don't think that's such a bad thing. I think actually it's a great thing, because it will break up a huge part of the control mechanism that's been going on for centuries.
Definitely. It's scary, but it's definitely a very exciting thing.
But if people look at it from a different viewpoint of not the panic of, how am I going to pay my bills? How am I going to eat? How am I going to do this? Well, don't worry about it, because the bills you had will become null and void as far as I'm concerned.
There'll be no such thing.
What are they going to do? Turn every single person out on the streets and have empty houses? That can't happen. Start growing food.
Right.
Start learning how to do that. Become more community involved. And if the monstrous machinery collapses, nothing really has to change other than for the better. There may be some initial discomforts, you know, as electrical grids go down and so on. But if we start really getting into more alternative sources now, it doesn't have to be a catastrophe.
Well, and people are doing that. And some people, you know, it's really hard not to be reactive, whether you're, what side you're on.
Mm-hmm.
If you're a fearful person and you're, you know, and you have little kids or something and you're worried about their future and you're not sure, you know, what all this is going to mean for you, that's one way of reacting, and it's fear-based. And then on the other side of the coin, you have a lot of people who are like, see, I've always known this was going to happen, you know, and luckily I've been off the grid for, you know, 20 years, and I'm self-sufficient, and I'm now going to get a bunch of guns, and I'm going to protect myself. And
which is the other extreme.
Yeah, so there's a definite, and it's really hard not to get wrapped up in that right now, because everybody's worried about the situation.
Mm-hmm.
And but we have to be able to and, you know, at least from my perspective as a spiritual person, is that we have to trust that we're taken care of. That no matter, like you're saying, what goes down, and I realize it's better for me not to just, okay, I'm going to run away now into the woods, into some community, although a lot of people are doing that, and that's cool too. I've realized that I have, just like I can't just avoid geologic changes by moving to another location.
Right.
I could move, the least geologically active place in the United States is in Four Corners, right? By Arizona and all
mm-hmm.
that. Well, I could choose to go there, but nobody lives there, and there's nothing really going on there. I mean,
right.
You'd be like out in the middle of the desert, right? Just to avoid hurricanes and earthquakes and all this other stuff.
And who wants to be isolated alone?
Yeah, I mean, so you could try that, but you're probably not going to escape that. And at the same token, I think the same is true with this economic collapse, shall we say, is it's like, well, the best thing you can do probably as a person is simplify your life, get out of debt,
mm-hmm.
these kind of things, get more self-sufficient. But you don't have to run away to a commune.
Right.
You could if you want to, because that's great too. Everybody's so busy, like, right now, trying to figure out, well, how do I connect with you then? If we're all like-minded on this, you know, people are already so buried and trapped that they, let's say they want to go to a community, they want to go to some community somewhere. But now they have medical problems. Now they're reliant on the medical system. Or maybe they're retired now, and they just can't get around like they used to. The economy's bad. They can't sell their house. That's the situation I'm in, you know, like that. So in one way or another, we're dependent on the system so much that even if we wanted to get together and just pick up and move to Idaho or something, well, it'd be very difficult for a lot of people
right,
to do
so
that.
We have to bring that community to us.
My community, and I live in a condo development, so I am not necessarily of the same age group. And I am not necessarily of the same mind as a lot of the people that live around me. They live in a much more conservative world than I do. And, you know, they're mostly retired and this and that. Okay, so there's a different lifestyle. But what I had this, like, revelatory moment recently where I thought, I can't, because my background is also in corporate development, I wanted to help intentional communities do growth and development and try to plan how to just start up and go. And I thought, you know what, you know where that starts? Right here in my condo development.
Mm-hmm.
I have to know who my neighbors are. I have to try to make community happen here. No one else is doing it. No one's coming to my door, knocking on my door, and saying, let's get together, and let's do this or that. But there are methods out there, tried and true, proven, that I can get to you if you wish, that have to do with how to build a community in your own neighborhood. And this is what we need, because if things collapse faster than we think, then you're going to want your neighbors on your side.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, we're not going to all think alike or be alike.
Right.
But this is the real challenge. We're going to come into this idea of oneness of humanity, and it's going to be despite our differences. You know? And I saw a program, well, I saw it on The Daily Show last night, where a guy wrote a book about the Constitution recently. And he wrote about how they did it, the process that they went through, where they locked themselves up in a group, and they did this, you know, they created this document. And it was this major thing, because they had violent arguments. They didn't get along in many cases. They had such a difficult scene. But they checked their egos at the door, as the guy said. They came in humility, and they made the compromises they needed to make. And we have one of the best documents ever written in political history now because of it. Mm-hmm. And that was like a real example to me. This is what we need to do. It's like we may disagree violently. We may have a lot. You know, my neighbors and I, we may not be nearly on the same level. I have no idea yet because I haven't stepped out to do it. But that's what we need to do anyway. We have to overcome that. And if we can do that, none of those other powers that be can stop the tide of what's going to happen. Because people will be, it'll be the people again.
Right. And I think also this might be one of the reasons why we've had any kind of disclosure kept from us and so much lies have done about and debunking done about that. Because I think if people suddenly realized that there was more out there than this terribly insular, petty, bickering, warring little culture, society that this planet lives in, they suddenly might, you know, there might be that connectiveness between all of us where people would realize we need to help each other, we need to become a community, a real community, worldwide.
It's the same
community.
Concept of that they use in war right now, which is we get united over a common enemy.
Mm-hmm.
That is the basics
of that
situation.
Basically.
But it only works on a large scale, you know, in a large scale way. It doesn't mean, we're not at the point, because in certain wars, communities did have to come together. In World War I and World War II especially, the women played large roles in making society happen. So literally, they went to work. Literally, they hung out together, brought each other food, whatever. Well, this has really evolved, as you can see, into a much different scene. So now we unite over a common enemy, and that enemy is terrorism.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe the enemy in the next few years will be aliens. You know, we don't really know. But allegedly, these are the things that unite us. But when people find out, you know, as this becomes disclosed, I believe that people will feel the values of community and things like that will come through much stronger. Because like you and me, there's a lot of people out there working and staying aware and staying above the fray and working with each other and being more green and, you know, working together in community and trying to form those bonds. And I think that we'll be in a real position to help in the larger situation because we're all themselves in order for that paradigm. It's not all on me, you know, to like figure out something new. We all can do that together. So.
Well, Alec, it's been fascinating talking to you. I'm sure we can do it again soon sometime. Where is it? You said you teach or you give talks. Where do you do that?
It varies. Sometimes I travel. Recently, I gave a talk at the UFO and Paranormal Group in Bradenton. That meets monthly. Second Saturday of the month at the library at the State Road 70, Braden River Library, I guess. But wherever I'm invited, I speak. And because I have a lot of spiritual connections, in different kinds of New Thought churches and different groups that meet, I go wherever I'm asked. So if you need me, you can get a hold of me, and I can give you my information, all that, if you want. But
how can people get a hold of you? Do you have an email address?
Yeah, my email address is pretty simple. It's cosmic.traveler with one L at hotmail.com.
Okay,
that's the best way to get a hold of me.
Cosmic.traveler@hotmail.com. So anyone interested in getting in touch with you can just send you
and
an email.
I do have like a little email list where as issues like this come up, I send out emails. If you want to get on the email list and get little updates on topics related to this, then you can send me your information and I'll put you on my email list. Or if you have further questions. And I'm really, my biggest thing is I really am a good resource. So if there's something you need information about and you want to learn more about it. I have lots and lots of links and sources. So, you know, please tap me for any related information on anything that we've touched on. I've been studying these things for many, many years now, about 15 years. So I have lots of developed information on it for our listeners if they want anything.
Okay, well, thank you, Alex. It's been a pleasure. We'll talk again soon.
Thank you.
And you've been listening to 2012 and Beyond on WSLR Radio 96.5. LPFM, and my name is Emily. I will be back again in 2 weeks at the same time. So thanks for listening, and I hope you'll listen again in 2 weeks.